picture of what it's like to have the virus.
Because we know firsthand what HIV feels like, what HIV looks like. And unfortunately, there is still a lot of romanticizing about HIV. Some people think, oh, you know, we have medication, we have treatment, there are services. Not that bad. I would like to say to anyone listening, yeah, it is pretty bad. It's very, very bad. Medication is pretty toxic. Your quality of life is never the same. So the best thing you can do is to, number one, take the HIV test. If you are HIV positive, seek out treatment immediately. There is a lot of treatment available. If you're HIV negative, do everything you can to remain negative.
Leyva says he has understanding of the disease now and knows people may be fearful and not know the mechanics of the disease.
And I think it's important for me to be open and to understand that people are afraid and not taking it personal and not overreact to that, and instead transforming it into an educational opportunity. Because it is best when somebody asks me and people engage me in a conversation in which I can clarify certain myths about HIV than leaving people with their ideas that may be affecting themselves, you know, maybe preventing them from taking the HIV test.
Reverend Maria Isabel Santiago said 30 years ago, with the start of the epidemic, the Episcopal Church came out with a saying, "Our church has AIDS."
And that phrase really mobilized at least the Episcopal Church at that time and others to start getting involved, right, in the churches and their communities and really work with the people infected and affected. And through the years, for 30 years, some churches have been doing that and more have joined in the effort to eliminate, but still, we still have infections, as it was said. You know, some areas, some groups are still increasing, and what we want is to stop, right? And so one way of stopping, as other people have said also, is that we need the education and we need testing, because the early you detect, so the treatment will be better, as with any other health issue.
Santiago says the church should be active in promoting early testing. Approximately 20% of HIV-positive New Yorkers are unaware they are infected. 33% of persons newly identified with AIDS just waited too long to be tested. They are diagnosed with AIDS within a year. Since September 2010, a New York State law requires people receiving primary care and hospital services to be offered HIV testing. But Jose Calderon says this is not standard.
Unfortunately, it's very uneven the way it's happening across our hospitals. And so we want to make sure that all of our hospitals are doing this as part of what they regularly do, right? You know, you have to ask someone if they want to take the HIV test, but that's not happening, unfortunately, in a systemic way across our hospitals. So I know HHC has kind of stepped up and some other medical institutions like Mount Sinai, but we need to see more of that.
National HIV Awareness Day today is a springboard for National HIV Testing Month in July. The hope is that HIV testing will extend throughout the year and then year after year. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
And that's some of the news for Wednesday, June 27th, 2012. The news was produced in New York with Jose Santiago, Rebecca Miles, Linda Perry, and Playfell Benjamin. I'm Andrea Sears in New York for the WBAI, listener-supported news.
And you are tuned to WBAI in New York, broadcasting at 99.5 MHz FM and streaming at WBAI.org. And welcome now to the program Earthwatch. My name is Robert Knight, and in this program we will be looking closely at a developing story in regard to a nuclear power plant in some jeopardy in the state of Michigan, the Palisades plant, where the control room is the victim of hot, leaking, rusty radioactive water. So stay tuned for that and more coming up on this edition of Earthwatch.
The bell for freedom still rings. The bell for freedom still rings. Sorrow to me, but does it ring to know the bell of freedom still rings? The hammer for justice still pounds. The hammer for justice still pounds. Heavy is the beating sound of the hammer for justice that pounds. Stop and see. When will we feel what we've been missing? That the man in the moon must have found. 'Cause he looks upon us with a frown. To know that millions of babies still starve. Millions of babies still starve. We can't have the biggest heart if millions of babies still starve. And the innocent ones still die. The innocent ones still die. We can't value life too high if the innocent ones still die. When will the world stop enlisting? When will we all stop and see? Cause he looks upon us with a frown. Light of truth we won't let shine. Light of truth we won't let shine. Tell me, has the world gone blind? Light of truth we won't let shine. As long as there's life, there's still a day. As long as there's life, there's still a day. And I know that we can find our way. For as long as there's life, there's still a day.
Greetings and welcome. This is Earthwatch. On WBAI, part of the Pacifica Radio Network, broadcasting out of New York, WBAI 99.5 FM and streaming at WBAI.org. And Earthwatch, a transterrestrial radio program with concerns about the home planet, tonight takes on an issue of some concern in the state of Michigan. There are continuing alarms related to a nuclear power station in the state of Michigan, the Palisades Nuclear Power Plant. That remains, according to both inside whistleblowers and members of Congress, in particular Representative Ed Markey, an ever-growing, clear, and present danger. We're very honored to be joined live on this breaking story right now by Kevin Camps of the organization Beyond Nuclear, where he is the radioactive waste specialist, and he also serves on the board of Don't Waste of Michigan. And welcome, Kevin, to Earthwatch.
Thanks so much for having me, Robert.
You are very much on top of the story that involves the Palisade plant that some year ago or so had an unexplained leak of radioactive water into the control room. Why don't you bring us up to date on the unfolding events inside the plant and the dangers they represent, and then we'll get to the most recent developments.
Very good. Yeah, actually, I'm from Kalamazoo, Michigan, in southwest Michigan, and have been doing anti-nuclear activism for 20 years now, and Palisades was the place that got me started in that. I grew up there not knowing the plant was there, and then in my early 20s, I started to learn about it because it ran out of storage space for its high-level radioactive waste indoors in the pool and started plunking it out on the beach on Lake Michigan, just 100 yards from the water, in outdoor dry casks. So that was my introduction back in 1992 to Palisades Nuclear Power Plant. This most recent incident is just the latest in a long list of dangerous episodes that have happened in the past year at Palisades. It's a 45-year-old reactor. And what's really shocking at this point is a few days ago, thanks to Congressman Markey of Massachusetts, who's a longtime watchdog on the nuclear power industry, we've learned that a leak of radioactive acidic water has been flowing into the control room of all places, where it's being collected in buckets, and that this leak has been going on for a year. It's been getting worse. And finally, on June 12th, once the leak surpassed 31 gallons per day, the plant was shut down. And we come to find out that the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, has known about this leak pretty much the whole time. And so that's one issue. A second shoe to drop that Congressman Markey has revealed is that the safety culture at Palisades is in complete collapse. And this is all thanks to revelations from an attorney in Washington, D.C., whose name is Billy Gard. She has decades of experience working with nuclear whistleblowers, and she is in communication with concerned workers inside Palisades.
As a matter of fact, her testimony is absolutely chilling. In just barely the past week or two, if I may quote this, Kevin, she told Representative Markey that this leak that involves more than 30 gallons a day, and it's radioactive, and it's going into the control room, says this leak has been constant and grown in size for at least the past year. This is not a minor leak. Last summer, it was estimated at 15 gallons per day, its origin unknown. In my view, what is most disturbing is not that there is a leak that went uncorrected for over a year, but where the leaking water was going. The water was leaking into the Palisades Nuclear Power Plant control room. It is beyond comprehension what the NRC has been doing over the past year on this issue. How can a growing leak of potentially radioactive water from an unidentified source leaking into the control room and auxiliary building and being captured in catch basins possibly be considered appropriate by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission staff? It goes without saying that large amounts of water, radioactive or not, leaking into and around the control room of a nuclear power plant could result in unanticipated widespread damage to the functionality of the control room, infrastructure, and circuitry. I cannot understand under what circumstances a leak of this magnitude coming from an unidentified and unanalyzed source running down the ceiling and walls of the auxiliary building and/or control room would be considered an acceptable risk for continued operations. Kevin Camps of Beyond Nuclear, can you give us a bit more specificity about what do they do? Have a lot of mops and sponges? And how is it that after all this time, they do not know the origin?
Well, they do now know it. It's been revealed that the structure that's leaking is called the Safety Injection Refueling Water Storage Tank. It's a giant tank of water, 300,000 gallons, that's used during the refueling of the reactor core to flood the reactor cavity, and so under that water is how the irradiated nuclear fuel is removed from the core and so-called fresh fuel is put into the core. So that water will serve as radiation shielding, and that's where this water has picked up radioactive contamination. Specifically, tritium has been documented in the NRC documents related to these incidents of leakage. And that's one purpose of this water. But another purpose is during an emergency, the water would be used for core cooling and for containment cooling. So this is a very significant, safety-significant system that has been leaking for a year. And Congressman Markey pointed out that really the response of the company, Entergy Nuclear, and even the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has simply been to put pails out. They call it a catch basin, but it's glorified pails to collect this water. We're not sure where the leaking radioactive water has then been disposed of or dumped, but it may be that it was put back into this giant storage tank, but we're not sure.
Well, I've done some research on this, and I've been looking at some of the relevant Nuclear Regulatory Commission event reports from Palisades, and one of them says as follows. On 20 February 2009, the Palisades plant resumed operation after a maintenance outage that started on February 17th to replace a leaking control rod drive seal. That's kind of important, right? A control rod, a graphite, or an attenuator of the nuclear, of the neutrons that keep the chain reaction going?
Right. That's another, I mean, the list of problems of Palisades is very long, and one of them is the lid on the reactor pressure vessel. And, you know, we had a near-miss, major disaster near-miss at Davis-Bessie atomic reactor near Toledo in 2002 because there was a nearly 7-inch deep hole in the reactor lid, and the hole came from boric acid leakage from inside the core of the reactor. It leaked out of control rod drive mechanisms in the lid and started to eat its way down through the carbon steel of the lid, and all that was left at Davis-Bessie was a 3/16-inch thick stainless steel liner on the inside of the lid that was soon to burst. So that's how close we came to a loss of coolant accident. Well, Palisades has a similar dynamic going on. It is also a pressurized water reactor, just like Indian Point in New York City. And actually,
also operated by Entergy, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Comparison. Yeah, Kalamazoo is 30 miles from Palisades, while New York City is 30 miles from Indian Point. Yes.
Well, I'd like to just take another moment on this thing of Control Rod 22, and who knows whether there might have been others. But the sealant on a control rod entry mechanism sounds as if that could be importantly dangerous. If there needs to be a scram, and the seal that involves the injection of the control rod into the fuel pile, or the rods of pellets of fuel, wouldn't that mean that the super hot water at the core could possibly escape through that same path?
Yeah, absolutely. They're on very thin ice at Palisades, and NRC is letting them get away with it on so many different fronts. And again, with the lid, the previous owner of Palisades, Consumers Energy of Michigan, said to the Michigan Public Service Commission in the spring of 2006, the lid needs to be replaced, and it needs to be replaced by July of 2007. Well, Entergy took over at Palisades in 2007, despite our best efforts to block the license extension. And here we are 5 years past that due date, and that lid has not been replaced. So the control rods that pass through the lid itself, is all at risk of failure and a loss of coolant accident if there's ever a breach in that lid.
Kevin Camps of Beyond Nuclear, what happened to the regulators? Who watches the night shift at a plant like this? What is your assessment of the acuity of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in shutting it down, monitoring, requiring repairs, or doing whatever is necessary to eliminate this and related conditions?
Well, at the heart of Attorney Billy Gard's letter to Congressman Markey, which prompted his letter to the NRC Chairman Yazko on these issues, this most recent leak at Palisades, is an accusation, really, that the NRC is either entirely incompetent or complicit with the company in covering up the significance and not taking action on this problem. We actually met with NRC Chairman Yazko in South Haven, Michigan, near Palisades, on May 25th, so just a month ago, just after he toured Palisades. And, you know, towards the end of his term here, he is touring the worst of the worst nuclear power plants in the country. Palisades is on that short list of about four reactors in a degraded safety status. Even NRC acknowledges that. But when we met with him, not a peep was mentioned by him, by his regional administrator, Chuck Casto, out of Chicago, by his head of Office of Public Affairs, Elliot Brenner, from Washington, D.C., or even by the resident inspector of the NRC at Palisades, who works there every day, about this leak. We didn't find out about this until June 12th. And we immediately, two dozen of us who met with Chairman Yasko that day, we fired off a letter asking, did you not know about this leak? If not, why not? Or if you did know about this leak, why didn't you tell us? So incredibly, the NRC at the highest levels is either incompetent or complicit, and we're not sure which is worse.
Have you considered the possibility that the taciturn response of Chief Commissioner Yasko might be related to the ugly battle that other highly pro-nuclear members of the commission have exerted upon his tenure?
Well, you know, full disclosure, I actually worked with Greg Yasko when he worked for Senator Reid as Senator Reid's top Yucca Mountain staffer. From 1999 until 2005, first Greg Yasko worked for Congressman Markey, actually, as a science fellow, and then he moved to Senator Reid's office and worked on Yucca Mountain, which I've also worked on intensely.
That would be the attempted storage facility.
At Yucca Mountain, Nevada, yeah. And to, you know, to be appreciative, Greg did great work on that issue. And even as an NRC commissioner and then as President Obama's selected chairman of the NRC, Dr. Yasko carried out President Obama's policy of ending the Yucca Mountain project. And that was one of the main reasons that first the nuclear industry and its friends on Capitol Hill, especially in the Republican Party, fought tooth and nail against Dr. Yasko joining the commission as a commissioner and certainly then becoming the chairman. They've been after his head on that issue, on other issues. One of my board members, Carl Grossman, who's an investigative journalist, puts it this way. Dr. Yasko is insufficiently pro-nuclear. He votes with the industry a lot. He sometimes votes our way, and that really has angered the nuclear power industry and its friends in government. The Yucca Mountain issue, Dr. Yasko's invocation of emergency powers when the Fukushima nuclear catastrophe began, his vote against new reactors at Vogtle, Georgia, because Fukushima lessons learned have not yet been applied there or required. These are the kinds of things that have really earned the enmity of the nuclear power industry and its friends amongst the other four commissioners at NRC. There's a whole list of 4-1 votes where Chairman Yasko is the sole dissenting vote.
Well, if there is dereliction in enforcement, regulation, and safety protection among the operations of the NRC, can you now tell us about the role in which Michigan Representative Markey comes into this to try and advance the plot?
You know, I misspoke earlier, and you just said Michigan Representative. yeah, Markey's actually from Massachusetts.
Massachusetts, yes.
I misspoke.
Two M's,
said
yes.
Congressman Upton earlier.
Well, but Palisades is the one we're speaking about.
I don't know what to say. Arch nemesis relationship between Congressman Upton of Michigan, whose mm-hmm. district includes Palisades Nuclear Power Plant. He's a Republican. And then Representative Markey from Massachusetts. Markey has been a decades-long watchdog on the nuclear power industry, whereas Upton in Michigan has been a decades-long champion of the nuclear power industry. And this is not the first time that Representative Markey, and we're very thankful for this in Southwest Michigan, I can tell you, where Representative Markey has exposed the truth about Palisades, where Upton is not to be found. Upton will go to Palisades and cheerlead out there. He's even called for new reactors to be built there, which is kind of way out there. It's not going to happen. But, yeah, it's night and day comparing the two. this time that Congressman Markey did us a favor was when he showed that there was a major security breach at Palisades. That was back in 2007.
Well, yes. Indeed, the Palisades plant is, of course, in Michigan. But Markey is from Massachusetts. But here's what may be a useful conjecture, is that the state of Massachusetts would be east of Michigan and in the wind stream of any release if there were a catastrophic release of radiation from Palisades.
Well, Congressman Markey has been concerned about nuclear power and nuclear weapons issues, not only across the U.S., but even internationally for his entire time in Congress since the mid-1970s. And along those lines, you know, Western Massachusetts is next door neighbors to the Vermont Yankee Atomic Reactor, another Entergy plant. And just south of Boston is Pilgrim, another Entergy plant. Both of those, Vermont Yankee and Pilgrim, are Mark I General Electric boiling water reactors, and they are identical twins to Fukushima Daiichi, units 1 to 4. So Entergy, which legislative leaders of the state of Vermont openly call a rogue corporation, is certainly on Congressman Markey's radar screen because his very district is surrounded by Entergy reactors.
As is New York, for listeners to this program and other work on this station, we're well aware of Indian Point and the disproportionate risk that is posed by its proximity to so large a population as the tri-state metropolitan area. And this is Earthwatch on WBAI. My name is Robert Knight, and we're speaking with Kevin Camps of Beyond Nuclear. He's a radioactive waste specialist and involved in many other things, including Don't Waste Michigan, and he's from Kalamazoo. And Kevin, I'd like to take this moment to offer our listeners a chance to interact directly with you and get deeper knowledge about what's going on at the breaking danger at the Palisades plant, but to perhaps better anticipate how to deal with such issues nearby. The phone number here is area code 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. But in the meantime, I'm so glad to have such a punctual expert as yourself tonight on this rapidly developing issue, one that's been festering for quite some time, but is breaking into our consciousness and perhaps a remedial action. So please carry on and continue about what you think might could be done and the work that you're doing with Beyond Nuclear.
Sure. One story I wanted to share with you and your listeners because of Indian Point is a really ironic thing. I was asked over to Japan in the summer of 2010. It was August of 2010, and my first stop on the speaking tour was Fukushima Daiichi. And the reason I was invited to Japan by groups like Green Action of Kyoto and the Stop Plutonium Thermal organization up at Fukushima Daiichi was they wanted to hear about the leakage of radioactive waste from the pools at Indian Point. And this dates back to 2005 when it was first publicly revealed that Indian Point, owned and operated by Entergy, had radioactive waste in the form of tritium and strontium leaking out of its pools of high-level radioactive waste storage and into the groundwater and into the Hudson River. So in August of 2010, I sat down with the mayors of the host towns of Fukushima Daiichi. Okuma and Futaba are the names of the towns. I met with the mayors. I met with the Fukushima Prefecture nuclear regulators, talking to them about leakage of radioactive waste from Indian Point, because the anti-nuclear movement in the Fukushima prefecture was concerned about this happening at Fukushima Daiichi. And this was 7 months before the catastrophe began. So that whole area, all those places I went to, are now dead zone. And the people that I met are either nuclear refugees, you know, scattered to the wind across Japan or even to other countries at this point, or else they're living amidst the radioactive contamination, you know, as far away as Fukushima City, which is some 50 miles away from. the destroyed nuclear power plant. So it's just ironic, that connection between Indian Point and Fukushima Daiichi.
It's a stunning and revealing anecdote, in fact, so much so that the several callers we had must have stopped dialing in order to hear the story when you mentioned Fukushima. So I'll invite them back. And this is Earthwatch, and you are on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Hi. How are you, Robert?
Good, good, good.
This is my nick. I'm getting a new nickname. I'm calling myself Pen Avenger.
Well, do you have a question for Kevin Kamps?
What?
Do you have a question for Kevin Kamps?
Yes, yes. We'll get right to the point. I was just wondering, it just seems like somehow there must be a more sophisticated way to get rid of waste. So once this horror was released, is there more thought in, you know, maybe they're like pro-ions and negative ions, something like a magnetic thing to draw something out? I'm just feeling this out. I just get ideas from time to time.
Okay.
Because I think the reason why I'm thinking about this is that I'm thinking of the sewing machine. For years and years and years, I don't know for how long, I'm not totally researched in it, but the last thing that was the hardest thing to do is to figure out where to put the thread in the needle. And it's almost like this for me, is that if this nuclear power is so dreadful and so disastrous and so damaging, how is it that there isn't some sophisticated way, some more intelligent way to capture it if it's a disaster?
Kevin?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Kevin.
Yes, the Attorney General of New York just won a major victory in the U.S. federal courts. He sued the Nuclear Regulatory Commission on what's called the Nuclear Waste Confidence Decision, which was NRC's flippant way of saying, we'll find a repository someday for the high-level radioactive waste. In the meantime, it's safe at the reactors, in the pools, or in the outdoor dry casks. The court said the NRC needs to go back to the drawing board and look at the real environmental risks of this on-site storage of high-level radioactive waste. That's bad enough. You know, it's leaking out of the pools somewhat slowly, I guess you could say, slow-motion leakage at Indian Point into the Hudson River. At Fukushima Daiichi, this was a very fast-motion release of catastrophic amounts of radioactivity into the environment. There are no easy answers. There's no easy solutions for high-level radioactive waste once it's created, and certainly once it's spewed into the environment, there's no easy way to clean it up. You know, it's in the soil of Japan. It's in the ocean. It's working its way up the food chain. So it's going downstream. It's going downwind. It's going up the food chain, and it will go down the generations. There's no easy way whatsoever to mop it up. These are artificial elements that did not exist in nature before they were created in an atomic reactor core, things like plutonium-239. And our body, our ecology, has little idea what to do with it. And it's highly hazardous, highly toxic, damaging radioactivity, unfortunately. No easy answers.
For those in our local broadcast area, we are speaking with Kevin Kamps of Beyond Nuclear. And because of your expertise there, I'd like to just take a moment to talk about the water and the heating that is being done, the heating of the Hudson River by the runoff of the cooling of the Indian Point and pretty much every other nuclear power plant, the pumping of the water from the river that entraps fish, and the extraordinary radioactive leakage of Fukushima. Can you unite those ideas of the hazards to water? And we'll take a couple of more calls at 212-209-2900. But Kevin, sure. Tell us about the water damage, not just inside the control room of Palisades.
Okay. Another comparison between Indian Point and Fukushima Daiichi is the fact that those two nuclear power plants both lack cooling towers. And what that means is that all of the waste heat being generated in that reactor, in those reactor cores, is discharged directly into surface water. So at Indian Point, that's into the Hudson River. At Fukushima Daiichi, before the catastrophe, that was into the Pacific Ocean. Vast amounts of heat. Two-thirds of the heat generated in an atomic reactor is waste heat. And for reactors that have once-through cooling, which is the lack of cooling towers, all of that waste heat goes into the surface water next door. At Indian Point, to give folks an idea of how much heat that is, that's, I believe the figure was, a Hiroshima atomic bomb blast worth of heat, thermal heat. Was it per hour or was it per day? It could have been per hour.
Wow.
It's immense amounts of heat. And what that does is change the ecology of the river. It certainly harms the indigenous species. Not only the thermal discharge, but the fact that so much Hudson River water is drawn into Indian Point, just unimaginable millions of gallons per minute, actually.
I was going to guesstimate megagallons per day, but it's much more than that, is it?
It may be billions of gallons per day.
Wow.
That's drawn in, and all of the microscopic life forms, for sure. But even the larger scale life forms will be killed by being sucked through the plant in that way. And we're talking billions of organisms are killed, perhaps on an annual basis, at Indian Point.
This is Earth Watch, and stand by. We have the next caller, and you are on the air. 212-209-2900 is the number. You're on the air with Kevin Camps. This is Earthwatch.
Yes, Robert Brandon here.
Hello.
Hey, I actually did the radio detect for tritium out at Brookhaven Laboratories. Their capture of it out of the groundwater is to then pump it back on site, and after about 10 half-lives, whatever that is, 90 or more years, its radioactivity is reduced. So the question then is, can we do something actually to the radiation? I used to work at Hofstra University, Professor Morrow, who at the Grumman Bethpage plant building 26 suggests that there is a way to not chemically, but also maybe in a nuclear sense, change the radioactivity of elements. So I know that sounds maybe impossible, except for in a cyclotron or something like that with a lot of energy. Is your guest aware of this in terms of expertise, or should we look into maybe what the government knows and is keeping from us?
Well, great questions. Another pool that has leaked is one of the reactors that at Brookhaven National Lab there on Long Island. And so, the folks in Fukushima Daiichi before the catastrophe wanted to hear about that leakage as well. Tritium leaks that went on for years and years at Brookhaven. And there's a great book, if folks haven't heard of it. It's called Welcome to Shirley, and the subtitle is Memoir from an Atomic Town. Kelly McMasters is the author. She lived in Shirley, Long Island, and there's just epidemics of cancer and other diseases in her community. And they attribute it directly to the radioactivity leaks from Brookhaven National Lab. So, yeah, I hear your question about what's called nuclear transmutation. It's hugely expensive. It's experimental. When I say hugely expensive, we're talking tens or hundreds of billions of dollars, if not trillions of dollars, to take something like that full scale. The idea is to speed up the radioactive decay of radioactive isotopes by putting radioactive waste, so to speak, into operating atomic reactor cores. We don't have that kind of money. When we're looking at the big picture of generating electricity that doesn't cause the destruction of the climate over time, we really need to be talking about efficiency and wind and solar and geothermal, much cheaper, much safer, much cleaner sources of electricity than nuclear power. And transmutation is kind of a nuclear alchemy, really, and it would be paid for by the public. Those reactors would themselves have radiological risks and would also generate radioactive waste. So I think, we need to go another route.
I'm deeply impressed by your classical references to alchemy, as well as the specificity of your geographical knowledge or affinity to our own broadcast area here and other parts of the country. This is Kevin Camps. He is with Beyond Nuclear. We'll take maybe one more call here at 212-209-2900. And you are on the air with Kevin Kemps on Earthwatch. Hello. Hello, caller. Listen to your phone, not your radio.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hi, you got a question?
Yes, good night. My name is Max, and I want to thank again the old talk show host and the guests for enlightening the public. But, again, all the research that you've done has shown that the negative effects of this kind of technology. Why is there not more of a public outcry? I understand that slowly we're becoming more informed, but the people who are set to govern us are really not being responsible.
That's a very insightful question, Kevin. I leave that to you.
Well, you know, there is a lot of public outcry, in a sense. In Japan, they just had 45,000 people protest at the Prime Minister's residence in Tokyo, an unprecedented large-scale demonstration because of the Prime Minister's support for restarting reactors in Japan for the first time since the catastrophe. Here in the United States, we're seeing a groundswell of opposition to atomic power. Right there in New York City, 2 years in a row, hundreds of people have taken over the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's annual assessment of Indian Point's performance. Up in Vermont, next Sunday, July 1st, there's going to be a large-scale civil disobedience action at the Vermont Yankee Atomic Reactor. Back in March, on the first day of the license extension at Vermont Yankee, nearly 170 people got arrested at Entergy's headquarters office. This one's going to be targeted right at the reactor itself at the front entrance. So I hear you, though. It needs to get a lot bigger even than this. We need to generate enough people power to take on a $1 trillion industry that really owns our government and controls Capitol Hill, controls the White House, certainly controls the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And, you know, I invite all the listeners to join us. It's a good fight. It's for the future of the planet and for the future of humanity.
You know, while we were talking, there was one more call. I got a quick blurt off the air. And the caller was asking about our Long Island living now past neighbor, Nikola Tesla, and asked why do not some of his ideas be used in energy generation or production or storage? But I'd like to expand it beyond just Tesla to the issue of the generation and storage of electrical energy. And what does that have to say about moving away from nuclear power?
Yeah, the future is renewables and efficiency and conservation. And Germany is showing that. Germany has committed to phase out nuclear power in response to Fukushima by the year 2022. And Germany is also a world leader in commitment to addressing the climate crisis by very stringent carbon dioxide release reductions by mid-century. So Germany is really looking towards a nearly 100% renewable economy with maximized efficiency. And here in the United States, Dr. Arjun Makajani, who I borrowed that nuclear transmutation, nuclear alchemy line from, he wrote a book 5 years ago called Carbon Free and Nuclear Free, a Roadmap for U.S. Energy Policy. So not only the fourth largest economy in the world, Germany, but also the biggest economy in the world, the United States, could go nuclear free and carbon free by the year 2040. That is Arjun Makajani's thesis. That's our challenge. It is eminently doable. We need to do it to save the climate, to save the planet, to save our gene pool. We just have to get it done. And, you know, we can do it. It's a matter of political will.
It is such a great honor to have you on Earthwatch with us today. Kevin Kemps of Beyond Nuclear. And how can people learn more about the critical condition at Palisades, the Michigan nuclear power plant that's leaking in the control room, or has been for quite some time? And how can people learn more about the general issue and support your work at Beyond Nuclear? Kevin, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah. How can people learn more and help support your work at Beyond Nuclear?
Yeah, our website website would be the best place. That's www.beyondnuclear.org.
Well, thank you so much. We'll be speaking a lot more in the future, and it's been a wonderful and enlightening conversation. Thank you again, Kevin.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, this is Earthwatch on WBAI in New York, broadcasting at 99.5 megahertz FM and streaming at WBAI.org. And this song is for the people of Michigan.
Out on the highway, like a creature from another time. It inspires the baby's questions.
What's that?
For their mothers as they ride. But no one stopped to think about the baby. How they would survive. And we've almost lost Detroit this time. How would we ever get over losing our minds. Just 30 miles from Detroit stands a giant power station. It ticks each night as the city sleeps, seconds from annihilation. But no one stopped to think about the people, how they would survive. And we've almost lost Detroit this time. How would we ever get over losing our mind? Sheriff of Monroe County had a sure enough disasters on his mind. And what would Karen Silkwood say to you if she was still alive? That when it comes to people's safety, Detroit, that time, almost lost Detroit, that time, and how will we ever get over, those odds are, we're gonna lose somewhere, one time. How would we ever get over losing our mind?
This is Earthwatch on WBAI New York, 99.5 and WBAI.org. Robert Knight here, and I'd like to have some thoughtful extensions of the conversation on energy. We just finished speaking live with Kevin Kamps of Beyond Nuclear, and the phone number here is 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900, because we do have the smartest and smartiest audience of them all here on WBAI. So give us a call.
Give me the spirit of living things.
This is Earthwatch on WBAI. I'm Robert Knight, and the phone number is 212-209-2900, and you are on the air.
Hey, Robert, Brandon again.
Yeah.
Last spoke with Helen Caldicott, I asked her how far we have come. I was at that Jackson Brown 79 demonstration on stage with Helen and with Daniel Ellsberg. I'm a geophysicist and did geothermal energy. So I ask your audience to possibly get books like one I helped review, Dr. Frances Sterrett, Sterrett. She did a National Renewable Energy Laboratory alternative energy facility out in Golden, Colorado. And they, in 1995, how many years is that ago, right, a book review of the then-current technology, Alternative Fuels and the Environment. I'd recommend your audience to query NREL, how far it's come with passive solar lighting and heating. And I just heard on your program today that 30% of what Germany is now getting its electricity from the solar, even in the northern climes of Germany. So it's all out there, and I know this, Robert. I'll let you know, lastly, that I was arrested about a week after the Jackson Brown No Nukes concert there and basically sacrificed my future. But I've still been pulling on the same end of the rope as you are, and I salute you and everything you guys do. Take care.
Well, Brandon, wait. Gee, I wanted you to tell us more about your great life and work. And, you know, 1995, that's not even barely a couple of half lives. And I was at the No Nukes concert. I was the news director at the time, and WBAI played kind of an important role in helping bring about the knowledge of this issue. And the phone number here is 212-209-2900, and you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I got a lot of things I want to say to you tonight. I wasn't really listening to your show. I think it was something about environmentalism. But I'd like to get this out.
Maybe tonight. A little bit.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, maybe it was a little bit.
Yeah. The night of Scott Walker's election, I mean, that recall election that went to happen in Wisconsin.
Oh, in Wisconsin, happened, yes, indeed.
I think it happened around three weeks ago. I was watching that on TV, and I think the votes, they started counting the votes. The polls ended at 8 o'clock Wisconsin time, and I think that's 9 o'clock over here, right? I think they're an hour behind. But anyway, I was watching the vote, I was watching them count, and Walker was ahead at 9 o'clock our time. Just 8% of the vote was counted, only 8%. An hour later, at 10 o'clock, I opened the TV, and lo and behold, Walker won, but it only said 31% of the vote. I don't know how the hell you could win something with 31% of the vote. And of course, you know, the Ed Show and the Rachel Maddow, you know, nobody said anything. I was listening to BAI for the past 3 weeks. Nobody said a goddamn thing. I don't know why, but how can you call a vote?
Well, actually, that was covered on WBAI, the Wisconsin primary recall vote. That was covered.
Was it covered the fact that only 31% of the vote was counted?
Well, I know that we covered it on 5 o'clock Shadow in regard to the crumbling of a particular movement into the electoral system in a way that is fixed so as not to really represent a cross-interest populism.
This is pretty simple.
The election was covered on WBAI. Out of fairness, I must say that it was, including the specific counts.
Yeah, no, you're a good program. I'm not knocking BAI. I'm just upset that I'm not. I don't listen to BAI all day long. I'm sure there's a lot of things. There are a lot.
I can hear the love. I know that.
But 31% of the vote was counted. It was like 2 hours. I mean, Wisconsin, I think, is an hour behind us, right? So 10 o'clock over here would be 9 o'clock over there. That means they shut the polls at 8 o'clock, and in 1 hour they counted 31% of the vote and decided that Walker won. It's impossible. It is mathematically impossible to win with 31% of the vote.
Is it financially possible, do you think?
It's financially possible, but why aren't people going nuts over this?
Well, I think it's a slow burn that's taking place. One of the things that happens with a genuine, spontaneous, intercommunal protest for human rights or any other kind of rights is that there are mechanics of opportunism of the establishmentarian parties and the entire electoral finance advertising broadcast system that try to subvert it into a mere election and somehow narcotize people into thinking that is a sufficient solution to a deeper problem.
Yeah, well, I guess. You know, I'm just late at night. I didn't follow exactly everything you said. I'm just very upset.
I'm saying that an election is not a solution. I'm saying an election can be a tool, perhaps, towards a real liberation. But democracy, or it's got an extra syllable. Democracy in America is designed to confuse people between two pretty much equivalent alternatives. Do you want to buy Ivory Soap or do you want to buy Tide? Do you want to buy Fab or do you want to buy Cheer?
Yeah, I
Democrat, Republican.
A lot has to do with confusing people, yes. But you know, this is very plain and simple. Okay, 31% of the vote was counted an hour after the polls closed, and they decided to call it.
Well, you're right. Fair is fair, and due process is important, and I support you on that point.
I bet you he lost. I bet you he lost, and somehow they squeezed out of it. All right.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the consideration and discussion.
You know what? Can I close with one quote?
Sure.
Okay. Here's one. Tell me who this is. My feelings as a Christian points me to my Lord and Savior as a fighter. Here's another one by the same person. Today, Christians stand at the head of this country. I pledge that I will never tie myself to parties who want to destroy Christianity. By the way, I am a Christian. I consider myself a Christian. So this person in history also considers himself a Christian. I'm just saying, just because somebody calls himself a Christian doesn't mean they are.
Who is the person?
Oh, come on. You don't know that? The first quote was Adolf Hitler, speech on April 12, 1922. The second one was quoted in the speeches of Adolf Hitler, 1922 to 1939, Volume 1.
Well, thank you for the reveal. Thank you very much. This is Earthwatch on WBAI, and you're on the air.
Yeah, Robert Brandon again.
Hey, Brandon, I'm glad you came back.
Listen, I'm not trying to avoid, but I've been on government properties. I've been shot at. I've been poisoned. I've been electrocuted. I'm still alive. The way I do it is I'm sort of below the radar. I've helped Jeff Brady, and I'm willing to help you 24/7. You give me a call. I'll send you my resume. I've written you once, and can you please explain to me your last name starts with a K or an N?
Yes. It's Robert Knight with a K.
I love it. That's how I wrote you about 2 months ago.
Well, please renew that, a letter or email. And I will.
That's how I stay. Well, good. Below the radar.
Yes, and I don't go on Facebook. But please then drop me a letter, and I will respond the moment I get it.
Well, I just want to let you know that I'm available. I think Jeff has me in his system, and that I, you know, maybe last time wrote you, and you did sort of in a cursory fashion acknowledge the letter without naming the author. So,
okay, then I'm not delinquent.
No, not at all, Robert. And I just want to say, I know that they're chewing on our ass in a lot of different ways right now as far as the high profile, but I really feel that we're at that tipping point and we're taking back our inclination to be giving faith and promise to or trust into the government. I know a few nights ago I said the audacity of hope and now the hope of Agenda 21 seems to overlap to the speciousness of our government being our friend and being a mentor and worrying about our future. So where it's at, it's all in the next few months or years that people like you and BAI, possibly people like I, can help pull us out of this trench, you know. And this, I don't know what to do because I'm a little bit afraid to get principally involved and ever be interviewed by you folks. So that's why I'm shy to the follow-ups by you. You know what it is? I'm trying to win the war and not fight the battle.
You're already in it, and we're going to win it.
God bless.
All right.
I'll again communicate soon. And just to let you know, we're not on the air. Do you want my home number?
Well, we're on the air now, but we'll come back to phone calls in just a moment. In the meantime, this song has been rolling over in my head, and we'll hear a taste of this while we go off air and exchange those details. This is Earthwatch.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds, are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. A field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street, singing songs and a carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. Your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. We better stop. Now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Ah, this is Earthwatch on WBAI New York. You guys are brilliant. And we were talking earlier about what is going on with the clear and ongoing danger at the Palisades nuclear plant in Michigan. And I have a copy of the letter that brings some alarm to the issue from Representative Markey of Massachusetts, and I'll just share a little bit of it with you because it's kind of a breaking story of these times, these days. Dear Chairman Yasko, Chair of the NRC, I am writing to you regarding the June 12th, 2012 shutdown of the nuclear reactor at the June 12th. That's the anniversary of our 30 years ago first satellite coverage of the big nuclear rally in Central Park in the March, as well as renewal of the moment with some very brilliant people from Japan as we wandered through Lower Manhattan on the anniversary for the show Ecologic with Ken Gale. I was drafted as a field reporter, and it was a very rainy and beautiful night. So that was that very day. Dear Chairman Yasko, says Representative Markey, I'm writing to you regarding the June 12, 2012 shutdown of the nuclear reactor at the Palisades Nuclear Power Plant located on the southeastern shore of Lake Michigan near the city of South Haven, Michigan. I'm concerned that the cause of the shutdown, a leak in a water storage tank that was dumping gallons of water into the reactor's control room, had been known to the plant licensee and to the USNRC for approximately a year, and yet the leak was not repaired and, in fact, worsened, leading to the recent shutdown. On June 12, 2012, Energy Nuclear Operations, Inc. shut down the reactor due to a leak in the safety injection refueling water storage tank, known as an SIRW. The 40-year-old aluminum SIRW tank, which contains a minimum of a quarter million gallons of water, is a source of borated water with boric acid. For activities during refueling outages, the borated water floods the reactor cavity to cool the reactor when the plant's nuclear fuel is replaced. It also supplies the emergency core cooling systems and the containment spray system during emergencies. The plant operators commenced the shutdown when the SIRW tank leakage exceeded the limit of 31 gallons per day established for the operability of the tank. It reached 31.4. The event notification report said, quote, "The licensee believes that the tank is leaking from several locations. However, at this time, they cannot determine exact locations. The refueling water has minor tritium contamination. Refueling water is being collected in a reservoir and then being pumped into a holding tank. The licensee will be shutting down to cold shutdown." I became aware of this tank leak and ensuing plant shutdown on June 14th when I received a letter from Billy Perner Gard of Clifford and Gard Legal Limited Liability Partners. She informed me that the leak had been observed during a June 30, 2011 NRC inspection and subsequently documented in an August 3, 2011 inspection report, which stated that, quote, "The issue was more than minor because it impacted the equipment performance attribute of the mitigating system's cornerstone, whose objective is to ensure the availability, reliability, and capability of systems that respond to initiating events to prevent undesirable consequences," end quote. Despite that assessment by the NRC, Ms. Gard has informed me that in the year following the inspection, the leak had been continuous and increasing, leaking into the plant's control room and auxiliary building. A number of concerned individuals contacted Ms. Gard to alert her to water leaking into the plant's control room and auxiliary building. I was extremely alarmed to learn that she was told that the water was radioactive and being captured in catch basins with radioactive waste designators attached. The letter goes on to reiterate that it's one of the 10 oldest plants in the United States, which is a whole nother issue. They're being approved now by the NRC for operations well beyond their design lifetime. And we're going to stay with this story and many others like it. This is Earthwatch. I'm Robert Knight, and you're tuned to WBAI in New York, 99.5, and streaming at WBAI.org. By the way, my email address is rknight, R-K-N-I-G-H-T, at WBAI.org. Here's another look at For What It's Worth. We'll be right back. The earth is going around. This is Earthwatch. Yeah, that's, you know, obviously a live recording of Rumpelstiltskin performing a combination of Dave Matthews and Buffalo Springfield. And phone number here is 212-209-2900, and we could squeeze in a couple more calls. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
It's me again.
Yes.
How did you get such a wonderful voice? I love voices. Some the sound, it's the sensuality. Did you practice that? Did you have voice lessons?
Oh, shucks.
Oh, shucks. You have a different air name and a different life, and it's because of your voice. It just lives.
No, it's all me. It's all me. It's all me, but then again, it's half you, isn't it?
It's half of me?
It's all me, but the beauty of the hearing is half you. Also, because you have beautiful ears.
Well, actually, I have omnidirectional. You know about mics. I'm the one that is the producer at Manhattan Neighborhood Network, and we were studying mics. And I found out, I was wondering why I can't hear in front. But my doctor did this little thing. You almost make a finger snap around the ear. And when I do it behind my back, I can hear better behind than in front. So nobody better talk behind my back.
You must be quite a fox if you can swivel your ears like that.
The Tibetans wanted to lengthen their ears because it was a sign of immortality. So they had those long earrings. So, you know, look for large ears. And watch out. They can hear everything.
Well, thank you. I've heard the most beautiful thing. You've made my night. Thank you so much.
You have big ears?
Well, never mind.
No, don't talk about size now, all right?
Yeah, you started it. I love you. Thank you. Thank you. Good night.
So intimate, just you and me, Robert. Just you and me.
Oh, Lord, I'm feeling that groove. Good night.
Anyway, I giggle.
Make this one of our big records. Had the pleasure of writing this back in 1962, and we'd like to do it for you, especially for all the requests we have for this tune. It's called Soul Serenade.
Can you serve it? Can you picnic? Whoa, can you serve it? Can you picnic? Come on, come on and serve it.
There she is, the great composer and performer, Laura Nyro, New York Tendaberry, one of our own. And I don't know, for some reason, hearing King Curtis playing the great soul serenade, this just somehow sprung right into my mind. And I guess that is a fine enough conclusion for tonight's edition of Earthwatch. And thank you all for being so brave and bright and helping advance the discussion. See you next week. Send me an email, rknight, R-K-N-I-G-H-T at WBAI.org. Stay tuned for Hour of the Wolf coming up with Jim Frey after this.
Come on.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a Wednesday night, Thursday morning program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. If you want to put all of those together, well, then you'll want to hear Gay Partington Terry. Stay tuned.
Yeah. stuck in my cup. I'll find a way to meet you someday and hope my love's not mistook.
Tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio in New York City, WBAI, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. My name is Jim Freund. This is Hour of the Wolf. Let us first get announcements out of the way. The first Tuesday of every month would be next Tuesday, July 3rd, and so people are saying, Jim hasn't announced what the next reading at the New York Review of Science Fiction is going to be. Well, I will. It's going to be in 3 months. It'll be in September. We are doing something we hadn't done for a while. We're taking a summer vacation. We used to do this all the time. We used to have actual seasons. We used to actually run from September through either May or June and then just take time off and retool. And 2 years ago, we stopped doing that because here would come July, and all of a sudden a publicist would call me up and say, I got some guy coming into town named Paolo Bacigalupi or something like that. It's not anything you'd be interested in. It's like, the hell I wouldn't. So it's Paolo's fault. Because of Paolo Bacigalupi, we teamed him up with Saladin Ahmed, and that was a pretty darn good reading. And then there was a reason to do one the following month. I think that was John Joseph Adams' fault. He had a new anthology out. And then a similar kind of thing happened last year. And all of a sudden, people assume that we go 12 months a year. No. We're doing 10 months this year. Also, there was a possibility that the venue that we're in, the Soho Gallery for Digital Art, may be undergoing some renovation, so we wouldn't have the space available, in which case I was going to rush to put readings together. But no, that's not going to happen now. So I'm going to sit back, relax. We will start in September, but we're not going to start with the first Tuesday in September. We'll start with the second so that we move away from the World Science Fiction Convention and move away from Labor Day weekend. So please take no note of the date other than we plan to see you then. That will be September 11th. And one of our two readers will be Richard Bowes. I do not yet know. I have not yet arranged who the second one will be, although I know I'm going to see this person at ReaderCon. If it isn't the person I think I'm going to see, it'll be somebody else I see at ReaderCon, because everybody's at ReaderCon. Many people are at ReaderCon. Many people are at BEA, the Books Expo of America. I guess it was Booksellers Expo of America. And I was a booth babe for this year's BEA. I was working with James Gates, who actually that very same day was on this show. It was the day after Ray Bradbury died, but we only found out that very day at the beginning of this month. And the Science Fiction Writers of America had a booth there, and they were doing signings. And a person with whom, well, she had been in touch with me, and I was undutiful and had not gotten back to her, was Gay Partington Terry, who has a new collection.